Hello and welcome to the Mogwai Podcast. My name is Amanda Stanley, and in this episode, Stuart Braithwaite and I catch up with Aidan Moffat and RM Hubbard to talk about Here Lies the Body, their debut album, which is out now on Rock Action.
You sung me a story, I whispered an oath, but everything goes. You wanted to travel, I blocked off the road, and everything goes. The bedroom needs tidy, the kitchen needs clean. I'm not easy to live with, but I'm down with the kids. And my mouth loves to wander, while my heart makes its best. And I can't come back to you. I wrote you a drama, you wanted romance. Everything goes. I stayed in the corner, you needed to dance. Everything goes. The bins need an empty, the children need fed. And you love the dawn chorus, you love blue skies above. But I'm all but nocturnal, I'm a vampire of love, and I suck all the fun from you.
That's our criteria when we went in to make the album. It's like, if we can come out and go, it isn't a shite, then that's basically the fucking, that's me happy, you know.
He's a glass half full sort of guy.
I'm only upstairs to tell Craig to put that in a sticker.
At least it's not shite.
Joined by RM Hubbard and Aidan Moffat, and also Stuart Braithwaite is here for the occasional chip in of conversation, whatever it may be.
Chief coffee maker.
I kind of want to go back to the beginning, and seeing as how Stuart's here as well, talk about how you all first met one another, because I know around the 90s there was a lot of music going on in Glasgow, and I know, Hubby, you were involved a lot with booking shows and things like this. So I wanted to kind of, for listeners, kind of cast a picture of what was happening around Glasgow at the time when you all met.
I think Stuart and I met in the very early 90s. We'd been around the Kazoo Club. I think we had,
was Adele not going to sing?
Adele was going to sing in my first ever band, and it didn't happen for some reason, but I think you came down to
I probably drove her.
The kind of rehearsal thing.
Is that Adele Bethel?
Yeah.
But we knew each other during that time when Alex was putting on a lot of shows, the 13th Note, and I was doing the sound, and I knew Stuart and Dom around that time. I can't remember what band Dominic was in, but
Bullwinkle.
That's right.
Yeah, really.
Fucking hell, you've got a good memory. So we've known each other since then. I think Aidan and I must have met in the late 90s. I don't remember actually being introduced. I think
did
we just
book
we were just
Arab Shrap gig.
We were talking the other day. It was my first week at Tuts. I think John Williamson actually booked it. It was the 10-day weekend, but it was like one of my first shows that I ever had to rep at Tuts was fucking Arab Strap, which, as you can imagine, was a nightmare.
Did they have unreasonable rider demands?
No, I don't remember it being a nightmare at all.
Oh.
It was good.
You were at that gig. I know you were at the first Arab Strap gig.
I got it for free.
You did, but that was the first time I met Stuart when I paid to get into Mogwai. Was it a week or two after it?
Aye.
Sleazy's. And I said, oh, I'm a bit skint, can you let us in for free? And he said, No, I paid to get to see Arab Strap last week or whenever it was. So it's only fair that you pay. And it was only until about 5 years ago, I think, you revealed that was a lot of shite. So it's been a very...
We've been lying to each other ever since.
Yeah, it's a relationship based on fraud and money arguments. But I don't know when the first time I met you was... I mean, it must
be around that time.
I used to go... I mean, before Arab Strap, I would come through and go to the club at Mono. And not Mono, 13th.
Mono, 13th. Yeah,
I'm sure I used to go to that a few times.
Must have met that.
Might seem like badge wearer and things like that and...
Well, yeah, I used to.
Would that have been about that?
Yeah. I used to put them on.
We would have been in the same room many times over the years now. Yeah.
Badger are fucking brilliant.
Yeah, a brilliant band. Yeah.
For the record, Stuart put a £5 note down for you, Aidan, to cover the costs.
All right.
I didn't even notice that.
We're good.
How much was it?
I think it was a fiver.
I'll fucking take it.
Like normally, the rate of inflation.
Normally, I would give you that back, but fuck it, I'm keeping it.
Inflation? Don't bring inflation in.
Well, I mean, what was it? I think it was £25 for the Ballyhans tickets. So,
oh dear. So you kind of mentioned some names throughout the time that from the early days of meeting one another, putting gigs on and attending one of their shows or repping each other's shows. How do you think that now, seen as like 20 years on, so much has changed in terms of music and how we consume music, but also I think like Glasgow as a scene has changed as well. For you now, predominantly as a musician hubby as opposed to a booker, like how do you feel like the scene has changed?
I've no idea because I'm old and out of touch. You know what I mean? I assume there's a thriving DIY scene, but they want nothing to fucking do with me. I don't know, when I started doing the RM Hubbard thing, I kind of met a lot of the young people. The kind of current generation of people putting on their own shows and putting stuff, you know, doing house gigs and shit like that. And it was great. They seemed a lot more organised than we ever were. You know, it was kind of...
It's more easy to be organised when you've got an internet.
Yeah.
It was all phone boxes back then and faxes.
Well, you know what? I remember this going back before. Around that time when I was in Glue, we used to book.
In Glue, not on.
I was going to say.
I was in a band called Glue.
Alan, how about the Glue years?
Yeah. I never really left, you know, but I remember, like, we used to go on like 5-6 week European tours and they were all booked via post because we couldn't afford the long distance phone calls, and it was Angus, the bass player, used to book these all. And basically there was a book published every year called Book Your Own Fucking Life from Maximum Rock and Roll magazine, and it was a worldwide directory of DIY punk hardcore bands, labels, promoters, zine makers. And it was just you got this one book and we basically go, right, we want to go to Paris, so you look up Paris and you get in touch somewhere saying, you put us on and we'll put you on in Glasgow, and we would organise these really long fucking tours based around it. And weirdly, once the internet kind of took that away, I don't know if the book is made anymore, but certainly people use the web to do booking now. It actually became a lot harder because there wasn't one centralised place you could go to. You had to actually go and figure out who was doing stuff in Paris and fucking find their website, and so it made booking DIY tours much harder. But everything else is much easier to promote a show now than it was. Not that nobody pays any attention when you send a Facebook invite, but Hey, you know, it ticks a wee box. I promoted the show.
It's certainly much easier to manage a tour than it used
that's
to be.
It's much easier, yeah.
It's just one email and that's it.
Yeah, we were steaming stamps off letters and stuff and sellotaping them on, and it was mental. But you go next tours and you get looked after really well, and then you get some mental band from Bialystok in Poland coming to visit you. You know, it was good.
Around the time as well, I'd spoken to Paul Savage for the most recent episode that will have come out when I've recorded this. We're talking a lot about just around that time how he had been working with you, Aidan, but then also with you, Stuart. Like, what was the kind of atmosphere like around Thriving Young Label at the time? And obviously, Stuart, now you have a label. How do they compare?
I think at the time, I mean, you don't think about these things when you're young, but...
No, you think it's normal.
I mean, and it was really kind of casual. The first time I heard Mogwai was actually Paul played me, I think it was summer.
Yeah.
Because he was talking about, and I was like, well, just put it on in the studio, and he played me Malcolm a song, and that was, God, it must be, what, 95, 96, yeah. Something like that? And it just didn't... When you're young, you don't have... I mean, no, I don't think anybody expected anything from it. I certainly didn't expect it to be... 20 odd years later still doing the same thing. I think my main ambition was to do a single, hopefully to get a Peel session, and that was it. That was my entire ambition for the whole thing. And I think that's what happens when you're young. You're not really aware of it being something. You're not really aware of being part of your scene or anything like that. But then as time goes on, especially when you joined Chemical Underground, it seemed that everything seemed to come together a wee bit more, and there's something was happening. And then there's Bell and Sebastian at the same time as well, and it did seem that there was a lot of bands getting attention in the same place, and that's when you start to notice it. But it's not like a conscious thing, you know, no one's trying to create a scene or anything. It just happens organically, and then suddenly people start taking notice.
It's just your friends that you're arguing with your bosses about who's got the biggest posters.
But I think friendship's a really key thing here as well, because you guys have all remained friends for such a long period of time, and also now just, you know, written and made this new album and putting it out on your friend's label as well, and that's like 20 years on. So I think that's like quite a nice, I don't know, like a nice thing to think about, that if you
can't underestimate how important it is to work with people you know and trust as well, because Hubby and I talked about this. We had the whole album demoed, and we were going to go to other people and send it around and stuff. And then by chance, I met Stuart in a car after James for the Twilight Sad's wedding, and I mentioned it to you. And then I think 2 weeks later, you decided it was coming out in Rock. I didn't even get much saying it, to be honest with you. I was just kind of pretty much decided you were putting it out. I was all right, okay. But you know, but as I say, it's really valuable to work with people you know and trust in music, because I've worked with some right bastards as well. And
I'm just thinking there about friendship and all these things that I wasn't meant to be getting that car back. I thought I was getting a lift back with Catherine.
So you were trying to woo Catherine at the label and not?
See, it's actually.
It's how all the signings go through.
Lifts to and from weddings. No, Elizabeth hadn't, again. Should meet Elizabeth, my girlfriend, is a bit like me. She doesn't really read emails properly. But it's a bit like me going to the BBC instead of to the label today. Like, she didn't realise that Catherine said, I can only take you to the wedding. I'm going to Aberdeen afterwards. So we were kind of abandoned at that wedding, and then thankfully, our friend John gave me a lift back. So yeah,
and you signed a record deal on the way home. It's great.
Well, nothing's actually been signed. I mean, there's
there's your advance.
That's spend it wisely.
Mind you, him £2.
Biggest advance I've seen in years.
It's good to know they still exist.
It's important. Even when we were figuring out who to include in the band and things like that, it was make sure they're not a dick. Mm-hmm. And then second, make sure they're good.
Always a good bass role.
Yeah.
Who is it, band?
Jeansy from Abstract is doing the drums, and Siobhan is coming on tour as well. Siobhan's interview for the tour was great, because we never mentioned music once. Because, I mean, I already know she's capable of doing everything we want her to do, and she's a great musician and a great singer. So it was just so you pretend you want to go and talk about the tour, but you actually just need to sit and get pissed to make sure you're going to get on when you're sitting in a bus with each other. And it turned out she's a right good laugh, so I did exactly the same with Jeansy when he joined Adult Strap. We went out and we never mentioned music once, we just got pissed and made sure we liked each other.
We knew we'd never last, we couldn't even start.
Just the odd top secret text and a crack across the heart.
And then you're gone. But cracks like that don't heal, they hide away. And now it takes so long to even look alright.
Hide the wear and tear is a daily dirty fight.
I think you've won, but nothing could conceal what your eyes say.
So yeah, I wanted to talk about Siobhan Wilson because she features on the album, and like you said, is going to be supporting on your tour, and also is just in the band as well for this. So how did you meet Siobhan? Where did, like you said that you were aware of her music and stuff. How did you meet her and decide that she was the one to come on this project?
I've
known her for a few years. I'm not entirely sure where we met. I think we must have done show. I don't remember ever doing proper shows together, but I think we probably did those weird shows where you go and do a couple of songs and then Roddy Hart's band's playing, and you know, those weird very well funded council things. I'd known her from there, but we both really loved her There Are No Saints, their most recent album.
That album, the last album's amazing, huh?
Yeah.
And I needed someone to do the first song on the album was always going to be a duet, so I was just waiting to, I had a couple of ideas, but Siobhan was, as soon as I heard that album, I thought she'd be perfect, and I'm very surprised she was in it, to be honest. I mean, I'm not surprised. I just, she has been really enthusiastic and really keen about everything we're doing, which I thought she'd be quite busy. I thought, oh, she's got her own career to...
Well, she's went to with the Proclaimers in September, I noticed.
Oh, is she?
In Canada.
Who would want to spend time with you two guys?
Oh, well, this is it. You know. That's it. Right enough. But no, she's been great.
Like a Dollywood.
She's been she's really keen and really active and creative in what we've been doing as well. So
we ended up kind of expanding her role a wee bit on the album as well.
She didn't give us much choice, really. She just kind of came.
She just came in.
These ideas, like, and you're doing it. All right.
Yeah, because we'd sent her the whole album, to the old demo album, to listen to, and I think originally it was. I remember she played cello and I was like, oh, can we play a wee bit of cello? And she's ended up on half the album, pretty much.
Yeah.
She made the grave mistake of telling us all the things she could do, which is quite a long list. And it's like, well, in that case,
I know, it was probably
before you go,
making me notes on the phone. Yeah. It's like she can do Rachel Grimes bits. Brilliant.
I don't know Siobhan, but I've heard a funny story involving the name Siobhan recently.
Really?
Is this great content?
Yeah. It was pals of my pal Sandy, who hubby replaced in glue, actually.
Oh, right.
I was at his wedding recently. I was at his wedding.
Is he doing well?
He's doing great. His wife Karen went down the aisle on a horse. It was incredible. but he was telling
me
that
on his bike.
No, he didn't. Bunny hopping down the aisle. That someone folk, they know, I can't remember who the folk were. It's the story that matters, not who the actual people matter. We're giving our new baby an amazing Gaelic name, and they're like, oh really, what is the name? And they're like, yeah, we're calling her Siobhan.
Oh no.
Which had to be explained that's not how you say it,
and nobody pointed that out. Oh dear god.
Also, in the same conversation that I pointed out, which not everyone knows, that the name Senga is Agnes backwards.
Everyone knows that.
Not everyone
does
know that. My
favourite Elvis song as well. Return to Senga.
Yeah. Anyway, back to talking about actual things.
That's some good content, isn't it?
Siobhan.
You're just another man.
You're just another just to live another life, and then I'm gone. But lives like that don't die, they haunt and free.
So keep your fingers to yourself,
keep your cloak and dagger loose.
Now you can go back to your boys,
and you can go back to your boots. It's almost dawn, so now's the time to stop the act and stay.
In the album, like with, like you said, the album opener, Cockerel, did you want it to be a female vocal that was accompanying you? Like, had you initially gone into that thinking that's the voice that I needed?
I think that was about halfway through when I wrote that one, and I wanted to have a duet that would branch out in these other stories of the same sort of characters and stuff, so that it was always going to be it wasn't always the first song, because there was a wee sort of intro that we had that we decided I didn't need it at the end, but it was always the first proper song, and it was going to be introduced to this sort of situation and talk about it afterwards. So it was, I mean, I could have asked Hobby to do it, but I don't think it would have quite the same effect.
We'll have to do that at some point.
Maybe when Siobhan's ridiculously famous and she's off headlining her own tours and stuff, then we might have to resort to that. But
it's always a pitch shifter.
Yeah. But actually, all the demos were done in that, you know, that sort of thing you get in GarageBand, change your male voice to a female voice. Yeah. So all the demos have like me singing her parts.
There's a 20-year anniversary bonus disc ready to go with it.
It's terrifying.
With a lot more swearing on the album and Nadia talking about
that. Speaking of names backwards, Aidan and Nadia. Nadia is my alter ego, so I had robot Nadia on all the demos.
We're going to have to get into production early for Record Store Day 2019. Lead times are getting really bad until these Rod Stewart picture discs, 7 inches that everyone's queuing up for.
Yeah, it's good. The releases this year are quite hellish. There isn't much
good
at
stuff.
All.
Really? Some good stuff. It's a couple of good live albums, I noticed. I can't remember, but I remember thinking,
they definitely made
it. There's a Bowie late 70s one that's never been put out.
Oh,
yeah, really? Mm-hmm. I suggest to me, if it's never been put out and it's never been a bootleg, it must be a bit shite. I mean,
no, it's been put out on a CD, extra CD on like that big, huge Station at Station reissue or something.
That'll be good. But see, that's a good example, though. It's just been hijacked by major labels making money out of fucking shit that nobody needs. But anyway, the record shops need it, so...
Is that not how we'd be making a living? It's selling shit that people don't need.
No, everybody needs music in their lives. It depends. But, you know, they don't necessarily need, for instance, the album of demos that we've just talked about on coloured vinyl. You know, an unlimited edition.
That's not going on the podcast. They do need it. They need it more than they need fucking hair.
Where did the idea come to even make an album together? Where did you get the like collaboration ideas from?
We've actually only ever collaborated once before, but then we just played it to death for about 5 years. We wrote a song together, Car Song, from my second album, for Toon Lost and Found, and whenever Aidan was about, I would drag him out on stage and ply him with cider and fucking, let's do the song.
Very cheap date when it comes to dancing.
You really are, it was brilliant. I'd gone out and I'd supported Aidan and Bill Wells when they were touring, and then after I won the Say Award, Aidan came out and did a couple of shows with me doing his spoken word thing, one at Mitchell Fair, and we did one in the Sage at Gateshead for Lowe's Festival thing. I think we were just chatting on the way down and you were saying,
I think it might have been along the lines of, we really should get more songs to sing, because I'm sick of singing this one fucking song.
I think we're both kind of lamenting the fact that being kind of billed as, you know, as R.M. Hubbard and Adam, you know, it's like a dual headline thing, and it's like we're only fucking doing one song together. A wee bit like I'm cheating someone out of their money here. So yeah, yeah, we decided, and then we, that must have been what, 2014 or something.
I think so. It was a while ago.
Yeah, and I started writing the music in early 2015, and I actually wrote most of the music at the same time I was making Telling the Trees. So it was.
So it's been in the works for quite a while then.
Yeah, but we only revisit it for very short amounts of time, kind of infrequently throughout those years. It wasn't like it was 3 years of, you know, like Arab Strap reformed in that time, Maiden's film came out. Mm-hmm. The film that Stuart and I were involved with, Lost in France, came out as well, and Until the Trees came out as well.
Squeeze it into our burgeoning movie career.
You just need to plan ahead these days. I mean, that was never. I mean, this is the earliest opportunity it could have came out for everybody involved. Yeah. So.
We had complete demos ready for quite a while before we recorded it.
When you were recording it, something that I thought was quite interesting was from the second that the album opens, you can tell that it's you playing Hubby, and then also like you as well, like throughout Aidan, throughout as the album develops, like there's kind of throwbacks to early Arab Strap kind of noises going on, and also a whole range of musical influences, kind of samba at some point. How did you find the balance so that you could, you all kind of had your signature on it, but it wasn't clashing? It could be quite easy perhaps to have lent more so on your stylings as opposed to Aidan's, or
I never really thought about it. I mean, when I was writing, the stuff I was writing for Aidan isn't the same as the stuff I'd write for myself. It's generally got a bit more space to it, and I kind of leave room for the words. But yeah, I mean, I think that kind of unfolding you were talking about was really deliberate. We sequenced the album in a way that we would introduce new elements and then build upon them, and then introduce some more new elements. And Cockrell was like the really classic one of, that sounds exactly like R.M. Hubbard. That sounds exactly like Aidan Moffat. Who the fuck's that? When Siobhan comes in, you know? And then there's some strings, and then the drums come in right at the end, and it kind of introduces all of the elements to the album gradually throughout the song. Which is why it made sense to put it at the start. But I think the less we talked about what the album should sound like, the kind of better it started sounding. Because we had all these ideas in that car. In the car trip, like, say, no drum machines. No drum machines.
Completely strings, acoustic instruments and stuff.
Yeah, fucking. Yeah. And then I would send a song over, and Aidan would send a demo back. And it would have drum machines, and it would sound fucking brilliant. I was like, I guess we're doing drum machines.
Look around you, look, I found you. The gods would have us read. Yeah, here we are now, gone too far now, lost and malcontent. And every day we shrug away is a day we can't relive. So open up your arms and legs and give. Am you here? Am you now? So let's stop talking. Let's fight the dawn and party on. Do something shocking. The skies won't fall, the seas won't boil, but the dead may rise anew. We can't foresee, so come to me and let's just.
Are the drum machines coming out for the tour?
Oh, you can get. I've got one of those Roland SPDX drum pads. My God, they solve every problem you can possibly have. That's all coming out. The drum machines, keyboards, lots of.
Yeah, there's a lot. It's a four piece band, but it's a lot of. It's a big setup.
But the thing I was going to say with the music, I mean, a lot of the backing music and stuff. Was that I did myself, but I'm not a particularly gifted musician, but that was important, that to me with your stuff, you didn't want anything that distracts with the guitar and what you're playing, so everything, all the backing had to be pretty simple, which I think is why it works, and all these like fucking one note bass lines and things like that, and or just following what you're doing.
It's more about texture and frequency than it is about, because my stuff gets really cluttered sometimes, but the
So I mean, that's what you're saying. You can still tell it's him all the way through, because it doesn't need embellished in any way. You just need to support it in some way.
I mean, it wasn't. I don't think it was until literally when we were in recording, we thought it was just going to be drum machines at one point, like right up until Paul Savage was setting up the mics and a drum kit.
Going to be drum machines, but happened is we booked
10 days.
You'd done your guitar in half the time.
No, I did my guitar in just over 2 days.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, then I think I had 3 days down for all the vocals. Did all the vocals in the first day. So then I was like, oh, fuck it, we might as well get the drums in. I'll do the drums as well. So then we did the drums. So it just happened we had all this time because we seemed to be so well organised going into the studio.
Well, that was fine. We had no idea how long it was going to take to record because we'd never done it before. So we were just kind of like, you know, Aidan was really well practiced because he'd just come off of tour.
Oh, of course, I was in the middle. I did the session in the middle of the Arab Strap tour in Sonoma. I think that's why I was so quick. I was just ready. My voice was nice and clear and
I was
healthy.
I was in the midst of a not working for being a bit mental type thing. So I had nothing to do but practice. So I was well practiced going up new studio. So I went. Everything, including John Burgess, who did the saxophone and Siobhan stuff, I think that was all done in like 5 days or something.
Mm-hmm.
When did you first hear it, Stuart?
I heard the demos. I just heard them because they sent them to me. I wasn't. They weren't submitted.
You didn't want to listen to it.
No, I mean, it was a no brainer because, I mean, I've been. As well as pals, I've been a huge fan of all the music that Hubby and Aidan have made, and just really excited about it. And it's been cool seeing the difference between the demos and the final record. And I love putting out records. It's kind of weirdly more satisfying than your own record when you get it back, and you're like, oh.
So the album comes out May 11th.
11th, yes.
And then you're playing St. Luke's, and then you're off on a wee tour.
Yes.
Is that the first gig?
It's the first proper gig. We're doing a couple of sessions before that for radio and TV, but it's the first proper gig with real people at it. Yeah.
Great. Can't wait. And Siobhan Wilson will be supporting also?
Yes, she is indeed. Yep.
And what can we expect? In the lobby earlier, Hubby, you said that there's a cover that is a secret. But
yeah, nobody's allowed to know the cover. Nobody.
Oh, yeah.
Once you've played it, nobody will know still.
Well, that'll be when
depending on the
feels.
Age of the audience. Yeah. I mean, I'm expecting a big middle-aged contingent. So
I think
that'll be alright.
Kids in America?
Yeah, no, same sort of era.
Same sort of era.
But I don't think Siobhan knew it at all.
Siobhan didn't know.
No, which I was quite surprised that you forget that how old you are.
I know. Fucking hell, I know.
Yeah.
I know. So
four piece band.
Yeah.
Four piece band. I mean, we'll be doing the album in its entirety and.
Well, not in the right order because
not in the right
some
order.
Bizarre fucking guitar tuning.
Oh, did
you
get started again?
Jesus Christ!
Fuck's sake! Yeah. We'll be doing all the songs on the album in a different order.
Well, we'll need to, otherwise the set would be very short.
Yeah,
the album's only half an hour.
The album's only 34 minutes, so we'll play some songs, then I'll talk
some
shit.
Cover 20 minutes long. It's a version of Television's Marky Moon at half speed.
Dub version of Sister Raven.
Yeah. If we're still short, I can play three birds. So, I mean,
it'll be brilliant.
I hope it's not shite. That's our criteria when we went in to make the album. It's like, if we can come out and go, it isn't shite, then that's basically the fucking, that's me happy, you know.
A glass half full sort of guy.
I'm only upstairs to tell Craig to put that in a sticker.
At least it's not shite.
Not shite.
Sorry, not shite. You know, it's fucking, I don't know. You can't judge how good your own music is. It's fucking, you can have an idea that people might like it, but you can't.
It's going to be great.
I'm really looking forward to the shows. I think it'll
we finished the record so long ago, and it's just been sitting on it and waiting. So it's, the shows at least make it a bit more real again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the songs find a new life when you're doing them live. And there's not too many changes we're doing. I mean, there'll be some slight changes, but they'll hopefully be for the better.
Any excellent merch?
One t-shirt and maybe a poster. Maybe a poster. I don't know if we're doing the poster.
The poster. Talk to Greg a wee bit about that.
Is it the mono poster?
No, it's a different. I did these sort of seventies porn posters, right. Like "Here Lies the Body," but it's a double sided one. So one of them is this sort of pink, and it's this woman lying reclined. The other one's a big muscly man, like so. It's a sort of blue and a pink side. Yeah, so you can decide which a double sided one. So you can decide which one you want to put up by, or buy two. Is
so you can bisexual buy two.
exactly. Yeah. It's very woke. Yes. Diane is, of course, the blue side will probably be purchased solely by gay men, and the women will probably like the red side better, but anyway, they are.
Amazing, guys, thank you so much.
She runs. She runs along the canal where her granddad took her walking, where the gypsies' fires would burn for weeks, and she'd daydream she was with them. Living on the road and stopping wherever, whenever. She runs down the street with the house, with the bedroom and the bed, where she might have lost her maidenhead, as Grandma would have said. But she could never really remember who was first.
Thank you so much once again to Aidan and Hubby for taking the time to talk. You can get your hands on their debut album, Here Lies the Body, from all good record shops or from the Rock Action store, where you can find a whole bunch of great releases from the label too. Aidan and Hubby are currently out on tour around the UK, so for a full list of tour dates and to keep up with all things Mogwai and Rock Action related, head to rockaction.co.uk.
By the back of the high school gym, where pimpled boys fell on weak knees at lunchtime and offered her forever. By the haunted houses, where the witches danced, where she was groped by a ghost in the adolescent dark. Then through the new builds, with big cars parked in big drives under big trees. When she was young, this was all a woodland maze, with a sexy secret round every bend of bracken. And then she thinks she's home. She stands in what looks like her drive, and looks at what might be her house. She looks at what might be her car, her curtains, her cornflowers. Her bachelor's buttons, hands on hips, trying to breathe. There are no lights on, there are no signs of life. So she turns around, and she runs.